Lauren published a big book about her, I think, time as, like, I don't know what they call themselves, alt-writer, far-right, whatever the fuck. And I think she's been writing a few Substack posts to address some final things, or if people are talking shit online or saying that something wasn't explained. I think that's why she's writing these posts. This is part five of a Substack series. That's the context. It's part five of a Substack series linked here, responding to criticisms of my book. Oh, well, there you go. The book argues that much of the e-political ecosystem runs on drugs, money, and celebrity rather than truth. Duh. Do you think she drew this picture? What do you mean you're logging off? I had so many different ways to call you an irredeemable whore. You could even call other people dumb whores. We could all do it together all day long to no end. Please, no, just stay a little longer. First of all, I would like to say, if you haven't figured out that X is hell yet, both literally and figuratively, I generally don't know what to tell you. But if you're not looking at it from that angle, that's fine too. Still plenty to unpack in the world of slut, bimbo, whore accusations on the internet, which many online fall victim to. You may have seen a few, or let's be honest, many directed my way over the last few months or years. Wow. Wow. Mean tweets. Not good. Did you abort Destiny's baby like everyone keeps saying? Damn, that's mean. Not good. Well, if a random person on X is saying it, it must be true. Truly, it's fast becoming one of my favorite guilty pleasures to read the ever-expanding fan fictions about my life, though sadly, I don't have as much time for it as I'd like. Between supposedly raising or aborting Destiny's love child and juggling all my torrid affairs, I'm quite the busy lady. I kid. Sorry, I don't quite live up to the hype of my supposed man-eater reputation. To address a few things I've seen circling online, no, I never cheated on my ex-husband or stole our son. There was no love child, affair, or secret pregnancy, nor did I sleep with half the right wing to write all my content. Lauren Southern cheated on her husband and stole his child, and then goes on a tour declaring him an abuser when he was a good man and merely the victim of her abuse. Wow. Much to the disappointment of gossip enthusiasts, my romantic life is far less dramatic than the internet insists on imagining. I'm not even surpassing the average body count numbers for my age, which is truly devastating for my legacy as Canada's premier harlot. Still, if you're parched for tea, my book does serve up some delightfully scandalous chapters, both telling the truth and addressing the creative writing that's been circulating online. The origin stories behind some of the rumors about my life are equal parts sinister and hilarious, and as for the true stories, they're more real and complicated than anything you'll ever see online as well. Though here's the thing when it comes to all the gossip, even if every wild rumor about my personal life were true, so what? Seriously, so what? I spent my early 20s going viral on YouTube for legally changing my gender to male for kicks and giggles, did riot tourism, got banned from half a dozen countries, was detained under the Terrorism Act, and eventually got swept up in a Russian foreign influence indictment where federal agents tried to turn me into an asset. Like, hello, did you expect me to have a normal personal life? I could maybe understand the fixation on my personal antics if I were still styling myself as some kind of trad life influencer, but it's been years since I quit publicly, or since I quite publicly rejected that label and critiqued the performative nature of the whole thing, and it is performative. And sure, I probably did deserve a bit of the leopards ate your face when my marriage ended. Oh well, we live and learn. I'll take the progressives getting a few kicks in while I'm down. Honestly, I prefer that to the feigned concern about my soul or my life trajectory from strangers online. I mean, come on now. Quite frankly, there are far too many people who have never experienced having their personal life ripped from context, dramatized online, and served up for public consumption, yet feel bizarrely entitled to voyeuristically opine on every sliver of information they scrape together. Masses of strangers have appointed themselves the moral arbiters of my existence, treating me less like a person than like a character in a story who owes them a plotline they approve of. The version of my life the terminally online right-wing internet prefers is one where my marriage never ended, the trad narrative stayed on track, and I continued performing domestic bliss for an audience invested in the fantasy. That's not Lauren, is it? Did she bleach her hair? No, this must be the person talking about Lauren. Too many blondes in right-wing media. Gotta do something about this. Not like that, though. I didn't mean that, FBI that's watching my video. In that version, it doesn't matter what was happening behind closed doors. It doesn't matter if the reality involved fear, instability, or humiliation, wiping my eyes dry just long enough to post cheerful little pie photos, role-playing the perfect life because that's what the script demanded. They don't care about what actually brings joy, safety, or health. They care about what fits inside a narrow, rigid template of what a life is supposed to look like, as if happiness is a video game. Press the correct sequence of buttons, and you're guaranteed the right ending. And of course, my life after that marriage ended, including my relationship with the liberal streamer Destiny, which I read about in my book, certainly did not fit the preferred script. Oh, nice, liberal instead of leftist. Should have been center-left liberal, but we'll take it. Jesus. I love you, but please turn off your phone or give me a call. I cannot support hate. Please stop this. I know this isn't your heart. Aw. If you're unfamiliar with the lore, here's the timing. The very same day I was flying out to Ottawa in late 2024 under threat of criminal charges to testify before the Canadian government that I was not, in fact, a Russian spy, my old DMs with Destiny, Stephen Bonnell, were leaked. That should be Stephen Bonnell the second, but okay. Your Honor, I don't have time for this. Don't you know I'm being canceled by right-wing Twitter right now? Messages from years back in which we confessed to loving one another, but I've never quite figured out how to convey to a normal person just how massive that was, but anyone terminally online can still feel the collective scandalized gasp. The kind that basically broke the internet for a few days. I was relentlessly dunked on for this for months, as Stephen and I's respective online personalities and public fiery debates did not line up with these private chats whatsoever. To boot, the public discovered that far worse than being a hoe, I am in fact a hopeless romantic cringe. As commentators read my sappy private messages to hundreds of thousands of listeners on live streams, very cool. Seriously though, everyone loves heated rivalry as a trope, but when I do it, you all boo, fine. The sheer number of men who once worshipped the ground I walked on, who viewed me as the perfect trad wife candidate, who subsequently began sliding into my DMs with messages like, how dare you like that leftist, you bitch, you were perfect before, was genuinely staggering. Lauren, your butthole alone is more valuable than 35 million or more human lives. Link hidden. Ask your faggot blue-haired nerd if he wants me to break all of his fingers or stab his face. Okay, based. Both screenshots from the same guy, by the way. And to think they say romance is dead. Okay. That was actually me on my other accounts, by the way. The Dennis plan, right? I do have to wonder whether it ever crossed their minds that perhaps I don't want to be perfect for them. Perhaps that was never the goal, not least because in their eyes, I'm not a human being at all. To them, I'm a character, as are all the personalities they interact with online. Given this, was this written before or after the Sarah Stock thing? Because if it was before, it was pretty funny. I'm sure it was planned before, but given this, it really shouldn't be shocking that I'd get along much better with someone like Stephen, who, while not sharing my politics, shared many of the same life experiences as an online personality, someone who can distinguish performance from personhood, and who isn't inclined to moralize about my history or treat my life like public property, the way the scorned men in my inbox so often do. But Lauren, he posted XYZ, horrible, offensive things about right-wingers. Based? Absolutely based. Yeah, I've never been thrilled about that either, but let's be honest, the very same people clutching their pearls over his online behavior spent a decade posting memes of leftists edited into gas chambers with Pepe grinning and pressing the bye-bye button. I spent a long time in the right-wing political space. I still have plenty of friends in that world, lots of whom I love dearly, despite their offensive proclivities as well. And I can tell you definitively, that the ones acting the most offended now are usually the ones who kept their own worst impulses confined to private group chats instead of public timelines, and somehow think that grants them the moral high ground. Worse still are the people who live lives every bit as degenerate as those they criticize on the left, yet dial up their moral hysteria for the cameras because their public brand depends on the performance. Frankly, the only real difference between dating Destiny and dating certain large right-wing figures was that I found out he liked men before we started hanging out, and I didn't have to slip my credit card under the table at the restaurant. Okay, I'm barely bi, so I don't appreciate that. What does slip my credit card under the table at the restaurant? Wait, what does that mean? Oh, like if the woman is paying, the man doesn't want to be embarrassed, is what, oh, based? I know everyone far too well to take the theatrics seriously. It's shameless and utterly transparent. The endless whinging about people's personal romantic lives, the breathless, oh my goodness, what did he do? What did she do? Their past is so outrageous. It's insufferable, and as we discover time and time again, almost always coming from people with just as many skeletons in their own closet. If I'm fortunate enough to keep my soul intact through all this and make it to the pearly gates, I can assure you they won't be populated by performatively scandalized Pharisees, and if by some cosmic mistake they are, I'll happily pivot and walk myself right back to hell. That's an atheist quote, but okay. In the faith I was raised on, Christ didn't die on the cross so we could spend the rest of our lives on a perpetual public apology tour for sins he's already forgiven. And even when people are still struggling with self-destructive patterns, which is all of us all the time, I can assure you that God didn't appoint some dude named 1488 Hitler Penis to be anyone's sanctification supervisor via x.com. I don't know what version of the Bible the Cross and Bio boys are reading from, but perhaps their translation came with footnotes from TMZ. I view the sanctimonious trads no different from progressives who want you to vomit, faint, and publicly weep over an offensive tweet from a decade ago. It's not about the tweet, and it's certainly not about your soul. It's about their desperation for a small hit of undeserved moral authority. Given that, for whatever perceived sins the online world feels I've committed, I'll pay my penance to God, not Vaporwave Marcus Aurelius calling me a busted femoid. Thank you very much. What's the difference between femoid and foid? I see foid sometimes. Is that just like the new femoid? It's the same thing? Okay. Seriously, who are these people? The kind of people who will yell slut or randomly speculate about your sexual history don't really exist in the real world outside of abusive relationships or the occasional drug-addled stranger screaming into the abyss or screaming into the ether as you cross to the other side of the street trying to avoid eye contact. I am begging you to go outside if you think anybody is talking about body count and sexual market value other than online schizoids. Oh, I've seen this before. Be me, 23-year-old neat, get off my ass for once and sign up for community college, attend classes in person because I know if I do online, I'll slack off, interact with other people for the first time in 5 years since high school. Nobody talks about sexual market value. Nobody cares about bone structure or physiognomy. Physiognomy? Girls aren't immediately rejecting guys with negative canthal tilt or recessed chins. See other bald/balding people my age socializing and having friends. Tentatively ask if I can sit near a group of people, guys and girls. They say sure and include me in their conversation. Did 4chan lie to me about normies? What the fuck? Given this, I think we're dealing with two main species, bots and people so ashamed of their behavior they never dream of attaching a face to it. Oh, and of course, there's a handful of influencers who simply profit from saying inflammatory nonsense. In fact, I recently confronted one popular creator who made a YouTube video calling me a lying whore after I published my book. We ran into each other at an in-person event, and almost immediately he walked back his statements the moment he was pressed face to face. The whole thing would be funny if it weren't so bleak. It is a performance, plain and simple. I think the saddest part, though, is that the audiences these influencers are performing for are increasingly non-existent. In the later chapters of my book, This Is Not Real Life, she should be linking to it when she says it here, not good, I talk about my growing concern with something called dead internet theory. It's the idea that the majority of content and the users online are no longer human. Some research even suggests up to 3/4 of Twitter is fake, which is very much in line with the trends I've observed over the last decade, not to mention the great foreign bot farm reveal. Meet the 24-year-old Ottawa software engineer who runs a MAGA bot base. This guy currently runs right-wing bot accounts, posting 2,000 times a day for him, and you're out here taking comments section seriously? My brother in Christ, you're being gaslit by clankers. My concern was largely sparked by observing my peers and I in the political space becoming undeniably audience-captured, speaking in ways I never saw them speak when we were younger or in person, remaining silent about things they knew to be true because of the potential online mob. It felt like governments or interest groups were pushing us in directions that served the old machine. Creators get bought off, new e-celebs are conjured out of thin air, and the original political oddballs, if not financially captured, are still shaped by notifications, view counts, and likes. It's not really a theory anymore, it's just what's happening. While I was at the height of my spiraling over this last year, I decided to disable notifications from any account on X that didn't have a verified email or phone number. My notifications were instantly reduced by around 90%. It was one of the most eye-opening discoveries of my life. It's not that I don't see criticisms anymore, just that the criticism I do see is original, sounds like something an actual human might say, and isn't an endless repetition of the same, easily programmed, highly inflammatory buzzwords. I also received significantly fewer nasty messages or comments on platforms like Instagram, which use real identification systems for ID. The few that I do receive are almost always low to no follower accounts created within the last few days from regions where women are still being stoned to death, hard to take seriously. What's more interesting, though, are the few messages that do seem to come from authentic accounts. So let's get into the other side of this equation, the real people. Sure, it'd be nice and tidy to just tell myself that all the hate I get is from astroturfing bots, and honestly, a lot of it probably is. But let's be real, it's also clearly energized an actual group of people. Last week, I randomly decided to respond to a rather mean DM from a man in the UK. Out of curiosity, because his account appeared authentic, his reply came in almost instantly. I actually feel so bad now. I didn't even think you would see that. You're a lovely girl. I shouldn't have opened my big fat gob. Next time you're in England, I'll buy you a drink to say sorry. Laughing face emoji. I am a real person who sees things people say to me. Oh, I've gotten a lot of these before where if you respond to one, they'll human up very quickly. I appreciated his humility/confession, and it certainly wouldn't be the first time I've had an interaction like this. That, I think, is another piece of the puzzle. People who've been unwittingly swept up in manufactured outrage, products of astroturfing, not the architects. They don't even necessarily know why they believe or think the way they do. It's totally unconscious. Mob mentality that they're shocked by themselves when made aware of it. When I was in the WWE, I saw something that stuck with me, not in the ring, but backstage. There'd be a wrestler they were trying to put over, someone the crowd just wasn't vibing with. You'd hear boos from the audience, or worse, dead silence, no reaction, and that's death in wrestling. So what did WWE do? They'd pump in crowd noise, literal cheers through the arena speakers, sometimes even piped in chants like Rocky, Rocky, for someone the crowd clearly didn't care for. And then I'd watch from the monitors backstage as the real audience started to fall in line. Like that fake reaction gave them permission to cheer, and they did. That's when it hit me. Most people don't think with their own mind, they follow the noise. And now I see the same trick everywhere, in politics, on the news, on social media. They play the cheer track and the crowd claps like trained seals, manufactured consensus, emotional manipulation, wrapped in spectacle. It worked in wrestling. It works even better in real life. This is why when people in chat, like Lazar, ha-ha me, the rest of chat would be laughing, but they've poisoned my community against me. I see what you're doing out there, motherfuckers. I think a lot of teenagers fall into this category as well, and will eventually grow out of some of their more youthful hubris that's been hijacked by bot armies, boobs, and videos of fast cars. I remember that Sneeko video. Oof. Give me a call if you ever want to cause another conservative influencer scandal. LeMayo, good one. It would be even better if we followed through. Oh, thirsty. Sorry, white American male. I respect you shooting your shot, but I'm a post-wall cat lady. I only like lesbians and gay liberals. You haven't considered the fact that I want a maple syrup MILF with a history of scandal. Nice. Every once in a while, I get a cheeky DM from some Zoomer griper that reminds me that 90% of their politics is just to be transgressive. Yeah, that was also me on another account. But there's also undeniably a group of real people who have not been unwittingly swayed by astroturfing and rather finally found a safe space to indulge their worst impulses. This would be the dedicated followers of the likes of Andrew Tate, the honorary alumni of Hustlers University, majoring in gullibility with a minor in getting rug pulled. I saw Andrew respond to my post on X about his crimes with some nonsense about me being a slut who wanted him. Who knew that ignoring someone's messages was the new height of romantic yearning? Maybe I really am out of touch with dating etiquette. Much like Andrew, most of his fans' criticisms of my Substack and book were just as sophisticated. You're a whore. That's it. Full stop. Now, if you read my first Substack or my book, you'll know the majority of their contents weren't about sex at all. They were about things like power, manipulation, belief, politics, crime, faith, and the messier corners of human psychology. At the core, reckoning with my own pride. All topics that could spark thoughtful criticism and real conversation of the people reacting were capable of either, but it should be no surprise that the audience of a pornographer and sex trafficker can only interpret ideas through the lens of sex, though to even use the word interpret is generous. What we're watching with the constant manosphere whinging about whores and thoughts and body count this, body count that, it's simply the predictable behavior of porn addicts and materialists. Their entire worldview reduces every critique, every conversation to sexual rumors about others, men and women alike. They operate not in reality, but in digital gossip and projection. It's not even fun or interesting gossip either. They don't care about or understand relationship dynamics or emotions. It's all just base perversions. And the saddest part is, from the way many of these manosphere posters speak, despite their fixation, they seem to have very little understanding of sex itself. People who actually revere sex, who experience it as something intimate, layered, spiritually or emotionally meaningful, sorry, just kidding, simply don't talk about it with this level of flippancy. Reverence creates discretion. Instead, they've hollowed sex out, stripped it of depth, and left only the crude shell, just as their false saint has done. We often hear that Andrew Tate speaks hard truths, that he's an important voice, but ask yourself, would his audience listen to him if he said the exact same thing, but were a humble, small-town man with no flashy cars or stories of conquest? Of course not. His appeal isn't intellectual, it's aesthetic. It is the cars, the women, the performance of status and sex. And part of the pushback I faced upon publication of my book comes from the same dynamic. As much as it pains me to admit it, especially given all the risks I've taken throughout my career, the endless hours of work and legal, financial, social consequences, etc., in truth, for many people, my appeal was never really about substance. It was aesthetic. They didn't want ideas. They wanted a pretty blonde girl to deliver an ideological lap dance. You're so right, baby. I wasn't supposed to stand up and say, what the hell, this is kind of weird, and actually you're wrong sometimes, and so am I. I wasn't even supposed to have thoughts of my own at all, just nod, giggle, and validate theirs. Now I'm off the plantation, and to them, I'm just the whore who escaped. This is why we only liked Lauren when we had the Obama video. True. Once again, addicts filter the world through their addiction. I smoked for a while, and everything became a reason to smoke. Fresh air, perfect for a cigarette, finished a task, I deserve one, stress, just needed to calm down. So I do sympathize with those struggling with porn addiction. It doesn't make anyone worthless or irredeemable, but it's brutal when nicotine comes as candy mist and porn as the first thing you see when you open social media. Escape is possible, but hard. Porn addiction is more common than smoking. Women are catching up, but among men, estimates suggest 75 to 90% consume it weekly. And so it's not surprising that more and more people are unable to interact with the opposite sex without filtering them through a pornified lens. In that state, even the most ordinary human interaction, such as a handshake, a shared meal, a smile, gets twisted into imagined sexual subtext. Oh, this was super weird and cringe. Brett Cooper apparently met Clavicular and she smiled when she met him. And like, there were all these conservatives being like, she's gonna fuck him, bro. She's gonna fuck him. She's gonna fuck him. She's gonna fuck him. Yeah, but it's also Brett Cooper was so fucker. True. Yeah, just kidding. Queen Brett, you could have avoided all of this by staying far away from the sex traffickers many me, ASU frat leader already mogged him. Move on. There doesn't need to be any evidence. The fantasy fills in the blanks. That's how addiction works. It rewires reality to suit the craving. With the amount of people operating in this state, real conversations about sexual assault or trafficking are near impossible. A healthy mind can engage trauma, law, psychology. The pornified brain cannot. In porn, every woman is willing or forced to be. When did this become an anti-porn article? What are we talking about here? She's not a person, but a prop. Her thoughts ruin the fantasy, like a cigarette lecturing you about cancer. You're not buying that pack again. Critics of manosphere idols like Andrew Tate essentially ruin the vibe. He is a justification for the porn addict's most base desires. He's not hated despite being a self-confessed pornographer, scammer, and casual sex addict. He's worshipped because of it. He's a totem, proof that not only do you not need to change, you should embrace the darkest corners of your addiction and call it strength. And when that addiction begins to rot the soul, as all addictions do, it's easier to glorify the sickness than to confront it, easier to crown a king of decay than face the discomfort of healing. So Andrew Tate becomes a hero in a culture addicted to its own collapse. I don't invoke this lightly, but only to illustrate the point. If the Virgin Mary lived today, she'd be the most slandered woman on the internet. Called, well, I mean, a woman getting pregnant, claiming she's a virgin. Called a whore, accused of cheating, her stock mocked, her story mocked by those with crosses in their bios. Her face would be memed, her trauma turned into content. While I am certainly not Mother Mary, anyone afraid of public scorn for telling the truth should remember to be hated by a world that once crucified the perfect man is no insult. That said, I've taken the time to respond and to write a book that's quite open about my flaws, not because I fear being disliked, but because that old line, the world hates me because I speak uncomfortable truths, is used just as often by hacks dodging accountability as by people telling the truth. The difference is in the pattern. Do their truths ever come at their own expense, or only when they defend themselves or line their pocketbooks? Do they invite scrutiny or demand loyalty and treat all dissent as betrayal? Do they genuinely challenge ideas or just insult, name call, and toss out empty legal threats to perform and intimidate? I believe some people care about truth, but too many are just hoping no one notices the emperor's doing TikTok in a bathrobe with his moral bankruptcy barely concealed by a ring light. Are you all getting bored of it yet? I sure am. Now let's tie this all up nicely with some last thoughts in part six here. P.S. Really annoying. Okay, I didn't know this upper part was so long. Okay, but really annoying and silly incident I need to clarify for the terminally online. Not that I owe the internet any information about my life, but since there is, since this is the only Substack post I mention Steven Destiny in, I should clarify something here. For readers of my book, the Tesla Añejo chapter/incident was the last time I had seen Steven. It was the day Trump got shot, and we got into a heated disagreement that genuinely felt like it might be the last time we'd ever speak. Based. Later, I sent my book to a range of political figures, from furthest left to furthest right, Steven included. I'm glad to say we've since buried the hatchet. Steven and I get along well, with the minor exception that we disagree on just about everything. Ironically, catching up with him was a great reminder of why I wrote the book in the first place. Of course, we couldn't just have a normal human interaction without internet crazy land intervening. At some point, people online began posting about how we met up at a bar in Austin, Texas, which, quite frankly, while it wasn't meant to be some clandestine meeting, is an insane thing for anyone to be tracking. The fact that people monitor the movements of micro-political e-celebs, I'd say medium. Well, if we're saying e-celebs, I'd be like a medium large for e-celeb. I think I get at least medium there, but okay. Of micro-political e-celebrities is a serious indictment of their mental health. Nevertheless, it's true. Wait, why is this red? I was in a town for a panel late last year and met up with a few old friends. The evening I saw Steven, I suggested we go to 6th Street, a popular music, bar, comedy, tourist strip. Minutes after arriving, in what felt like a schizophrenic hallucination, a woman started screaming at us and sprinting across the road with her iPhone out recording. Knowing I wanted absolutely nothing to do with the clout harvesting ritual that was about to occur, I immediately turned my heel and walked away, only to be chased down the street while she filmed. Thankfully, I escaped into a back alley and found refuge among some crackheads who provided far saner company. Naturally, this woman later posted online claiming that, rather than it being my idea to go to a bar on 6th Street, Steven had actually dragged me into a witness intimidation scheme to stalk and harass her, and that we had been patrolling the neighborhood on the prowl to find her. I don't know what people online think I do in my spare time, but it's definitely not LARPing as an anime henchman in tourist traps hunting down random Twitter account users, like hello. Nevertheless, this absolutely schizophrenic narrative proceeded to trend on Twitter. Legal analysis YouTubers weighed in. Viral tweets with tens of thousands of likes confidently confirmed her storyline, all while she claimed she couldn't upload her side of the video for legal reasons and that she had filed a police report. I reckon uploading a video where she's chasing me as I ask her to leave me alone probably doesn't really play well for the stalking narrative and might even result in her catching a fine for wasting police time if she actually did file said report. Anyway, there's a reason I'm not naming anyone or linking anything. This is just to set the record straight for the three people who care about this nonsense. Also, perhaps for the police, if, God forbid, they have been sent on a moronic quest to investigate. I truly have no time left for the terminally online and their internet mythologies. Lauren, you're not supposed to hang out with X. Lauren, why did this or that? Dog, I've watched realities I personally lived in get inverted in real time 1,000 times over. Online, people perpetually confuse narrative for truth, content for human interaction, and proximity to a screen for understanding someone's life. I'll try to write about actual reality in this Substack when I can, but I'm one person versus a small army of full-time attention crackheads and narrative engineers who are financially incentivized to lie 24/7. A friend reminded me that I wrote an article in 2021 called The Rise of Systemic Tabloidism, about the exact phenomenon I discussed later in my book. I'd totally forgotten I wrote this article, which caused my friend to say that I was yet again too early, so early that I don't even remember it. So if I can't even remember what I've written in the past, I certainly can't keep up with all the e-drama about myself, nor should I have to. Please, if I do something you don't understand, just remember what you read online is not real life. Good luck out there and stay sane. Wow, epic. Why did Daily Gunna delete her ex again? I don't know. Maybe she's trying not to have a connection to all of like the weird, crazy shit she's done, but I'll take care of that. Don't worry.